Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the we just hit a million orders stage. No matter what stage you're in, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/special offer, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/special offer.
All right, the Reds, it is the Anfield Wrap. Monday's Anfield Wrap with me, Gareth Roberts. I've got Ian Salmon, Mike Kearney and Andy Heaton with me. I'm going to talk about the Reds, a little bit about England, and, you know, any other business, really. But we'll start with the Reds, because there's plenty about England out there, isn't there? And we're not an England podcast at the end of the day, but we are going to talk about what our feelings are about England, because it feels like we haven't really done that properly on the Anfield Wrap for a while. But we are going to start with the Reds. 47 days until the Reds kick off the new season. Norwich away on the 14th of August, followed by Burnley at home and Chelsea at home. Obviously, lots can and hopefully will change about the makeup of the squad before then. But Mike, what are your current thoughts on the Liverpool squad as things stand? Because, you know, obviously, we're in the middle of the Euros and all the rest of it, but people are, and I assume you're one of them, you can't help but look at those fixtures and start to plan it out in your head and how it's going to look and how it's going to work. So what are your feelings about the squad right now?
I'm excited. You know, this is obviously largely the squad that is, we've seen win us lots. So, you know, little bits of additions here and there. People going back to fitness is obviously a massive thing, which is always good to have. I think they've probably gone and done the most important bit of business dead early. Get the lad in, Konate. If I'm pronouncing that wrong, I'm sorry. But we got a centre-half in. It feels like that's what we wanted. We had Kabak and Phillips and Davis and all that, but Kabak and Davis in January to cover holes in that. But we went and got that done first, so we can be in first day of pre-season, and you would imagine probably start. But that's all dependent on what everyone else comes back as. But we got that done. You know, Mo Salah's not going to the Olympics now as well, which come out, I think, sometime last week. So them three games there, you know, it's relatively sound, isn't it? You know, you've got a newly promoted side, fair enough, but it's not like we haven't had that in the past. We literally won the league when we played Norwich at home the other year. At their place might be a bit different, but, you know, this squad is evidently good. We've seen it. So, you know, we've got no real surprises coming up, maybe, and a lot of players there now know what Jürgen's pre-seasons are all about. They've had a couple of months off. You know, obviously, weeks even mainly. We've still got a couple of the Brazilian lads over in Brazil at the Copa America. You know, Jota just comes home and goes on his little break. So I'm really excited about the new season. We're relatively going to have a pretty strong squad from the start, really, in terms of, you know, players coming home from competitions and stuff like that. And as I said before, you know, the fact that we're starting the season, hopefully hitting the ground running, up front, you know, we'll have Salah and Mane, you know, at the back, as I say, beside Konate. I can't wait for the season to start. And you're right, like, we're all planning out them first three games. We need to be 6 points on the board going into Chelsea, really, ideally, to lay an early message down that you reckon you're a good, do you now? Well, nah, you know, we're back in town, and you've got to worry about us now.
And Ian, a big one on sort of how, as we start to look, you know, think about what that first match will look like and who might be in the side and all that kind of stuff. There are obviously unknowns in terms of we may and we should, in my opinion, be signing some more players. But also, you know, there are the crew of lads, basically, because it was basically a crew at times of the lads who were injured. The big one, though, the big thing, the massive thing, is some footage out there the last couple of days of Van Dijk training. Looks in fantastic shape, smile on his face, kicking through the ball as well properly, you know, putting the ball in the back of the net past the keeper. You kind of think, you know, given the injury he had, that if he's doing that, things are on course, things look to be in the right place, and he, fingers crossed, touch wood, you know, whatever you believe in, do it all now, because it looks as though he should be okay. I mean, no one said so, but we're joining dots. It's that time of year. It looks as though he will be okay for the start of the season. And if that is the case, that is absolutely massive, isn't it?
It's huge. I mean, it's everything he brings us. It's not just his own individual performances at the back. It's not just how he reads his game. Pardon me. It's how he reads everybody else's game. It's the way he'll talk the rest of the team through it. He is a vocal leader at the back, and he will organise. So the organisation, you look at where we really suffered when we lost him. It took a couple of months for us to actually suffer. But it wasn't so much the defending. It wasn't so much the individual defending, because we weren't conceding that many goals. Our problem was that we were just not scoring goals. Our problem was the shape of the team just wasn't what it had been previously. And you've got to look at him and go, he's so influential on the shape of everything he sees before him. This is why you make centre-backs captains. This is why centre-backs can be the dominant force in your team, because they see everything that's in front of them, especially if they're really good. And he is, you know, he is basically the world's best central defender when he's on form. So he's seeing what's in front of him. He's shaping the game for you. Also, his passing range from deep can shape the game for the wingers. To go back to the squad thing, 47 days suddenly seems a hell of a long time. I'd quite happily write the Euros off now if you told me the real footy starts again on Monday. I'd kind of be like, I'm not asked who wins this. I just want to see football played. So the 47 days seems a hell of a long time, and the squad, I do have a few qualms about. I do think we need to go and buy a forward who can challenge Bobby down the centre. I know one of the things that was hinted at last season was Oxlade-Chamberlain becoming a false nine. Jürgen spoke about it a couple of times. That could be something that we're seeing, but I do think we need that. I think we need probably two midfielders. Without banging the anti-Naby drum again, I think it's time to move Naby Keita on, because he's not going to be reliable for us. We're not getting the best from the player, and it's kind of, you've got to look and go, this hasn't worked. Let's get in somebody who will work in the long term for us, which I think means we need somebody to take over Naby's role, and we need somebody in Wijnaldum's role. I would definitely be on the Renato Sanchez bandwagon at the moment.
He doesn't play a lot for his club, though, I would say, in terms of injury record. But anyway, that's very gutter, that, isn't it, to talk about
it actual...
We can't tread on the toes of Rob Gutman, Naya Rob. If you do want to listen to loads and loads of chat about who we might sign, do subscribe and listen to the gutter.
As if Rob listens to any show that he's not on.
He started listening now, you know. He has. He started actually consuming and fear of content.
Well, let's just see if he listens to this.
He's fed back. Anyway... Where are you on it, Andy? I just want on Van Dijk as well, just before we move on from that point as well. He's a cultural leader, isn't he, in terms of not only is he all the things Ian said, but also you just get the general impression, and you know, we were fortunate enough to interview him in Qatar. He's just dead sound and he's boss to be around, isn't he? And you know, you saw, I don't know if you've all seen it, but Liverpool put a video out, you know, where they're all doing stuff for the new season and making little GIF things and blah, 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 and getting the, you know, pictures of them shot in the new kit and what have you. And, you know, Van Dijk turns up with this Joe Matip t-shirt. And then he's like, you know, and he's oh, hello, City. Shut up, you blurt. And he's taking the mick out of Joel. Everyone's laughing. And you know what I mean? And having that in a workplace is important, isn't it? You know, when you've got someone like that who can relax everyone. I think as well, just the stature of the man, you know, for both sides, your side and the opposition. When you see Van Dijk in the tunnel, but you'll be going, if you're on his side, get in. And if you're against them, you'll be going, shit.
Well, even City got excited. So, I mean,
City was banging to that, wasn't it?
First time Siri's ever been called up playing it by anyone.
No, but I think you're right. And I'm going to take issue with the Naby Keita bit in a minute, just so you know.
How long?
He's...
Beef?
Yeah. Started an argument without trying.
There you go. I think with Van Dijk, he's like a lighthouse for Liverpool. he's just like a beacon, almost. Sorry, a beacon's a better word. He's just Ian's writing when he says he's the best centre half in the world. Not even on form, he's just the best centre half in the world. And unfortunately, when you have players who are that important, when you miss them, it doesn't just change one thing, it changes lots of things. And I think it absolutely affected the way the rest of the team played for the majority of last season. I mean, not even the obvious ones, not even like having to play Firmino centre-half, even so much as that Trent didn't get anywhere as far forward until the end of the season that he had been, because he didn't have that security blanket behind him. You know, and even so much as Bobby, you were just so many cogs in the machine, and then you see the effects of it. So you say it's about Bobby Firmino. I'd like to see, I'm curious as to whether Firmino has the season he does if these injuries we had hadn't happened. I mean, even Thiago, to a certain extent, we only saw the real Thiago in the last 10 games of the season. That wouldn't have been the plan. And I think he's a leader, and he's not the captain, but he's kind of like Carragher, and he's a captain in an all-but name. You know, people look to him. I mean, he goes back to the goalkeeper, Alisson. All right, he finished the season sensationally, you know, like the most dramatic fashion ever, but I think the goalkeeper missed him. And that isn't a criticism of Alisson's quality. We all know he's one of the best in Europe, if not the best. But when you're so used to, especially in defence, playing in partnership, people talk about squad rotation. But I think, especially in centre defence with big sides, they never generally rotate the centre-halves unless they have to. Character-wise, yeah, absolutely fundamental. It's just that calm assurance, the games where we can see the last minute equaliser or made daft mistakes in the last couple of minutes, I don't think they happen half as much as if he's there. Because how many times when he's on the pitch, you see him going, like, not gesticulating, but just going, look, just calm down a minute. Massive, I'm not going to say like a new signing, even though we just said it, but if he comes back 90%, 80% of what he was, then he makes Liverpool at least 30, 40% better, I think. On Naby Keita, agree to a point, but I don't see the point of putting him through this 3-month rehab where he's actually fit enough to play, but putting him through this 3-month programme towards the end of the season to then just cannon him off in the summer.
But didn't we do that more like the middle of the season, and the Madrid game was his comeback from that?
I think they rushed it again.
I think the problem is rushing it in.
The necessity and all that. If they're confident that he can string 10 games together, then I don't see the point. He's on a long contract. His contract, his transfer value isn't going to decline. Not over the space of a year. If anything, if he even makes a medium impact, shall we say, his transfer value will increase because people see the potential, he can improve his fitness. And squad-wise, can I talk about the squad? Because Squad-wise, I don't think we're as far away as what people say they are. I think Liverpool will do more business, but I think it'll be quality over quantity. I think we saw links yesterday with Kingsley Coman, and that makes sense, and with Bayern Munich, and I love the way Liverpool transfer stories get not leaked but reported nowadays, because it always seems to come from the other end, and that's when it seems to have a bit of substance to it. If we don't have the horrific look that we had last year, the squad's not as in anywhere near as bad a shape as what people are saying. So you've got Konate in. So there's another centre half. So you've got four top class centre halves. Okay.
Yeah.
And that's not including that Phillips who may leave. And, you know, best of luck to
Williams, possibly Rhys Ben Williams Davis there, if the rumours are true.
Whatever you've got, I think we're maybe lacking a little bit of fullback. I mean, we haven't seen anything of Tsimikas, let's be honest. But on the right hand side, maybe that's a little bit of a concern. But, you know, Liverpool saying they won't sign another right back, and I remember the club saying that Danny Ward would be number one 2 days before we signed Alisson Becker. So,
they don't tell you anymore.
They don't. And then midfields, you've got, let's go, well, I mean, have a look at it now. Suddenly you've got Fabinho, you've got Henderson. I'm going to miss someone else. Fabinho, Henderson, Thiago, James Milner,
Chamberlain.
Chamberlain, Keita. Shaqiri, if you want to use him in there. Jones. But we started last season with 9 midfielders, and by the end of the season, we were absolutely on our arse.
That's because of the impact of where we had to move them around.
We'll have Fabinho back in midfield.
Exactly,
Curtis is a year on it and can play a bit more footy now.
But I think Fabinho was massive. And then you look at the attacking unit, if you want. Well, we've just been linked to Coleman. I think that if they sign anyone anywhere, it'll be in that area, whether it's central or more back up to Salamana and Jota. But we're not. It sounds ridiculous to say we're not lacking in depth, given what we were looking at last year and some of the benches. But the fact of the matter is, it was almost as bad as Souness era, injury wise. So I'd rather than...
I genuinely think it was far worse. I don't think Souness's era actually impacted the team as a whole as much as last season did.
Poor Phil Bowersma. Still getting all these years on.
I'd rather them throw their eggs in two very expensive baskets than try and pad the squad out. Because what's the point of the academy either if you can't do that?
Yeah, well, the idea of using Conor Bradley at right back, I know nothing about Conor Bradley at all. People are saying he's too young. Well, he's the same age that Trent was when Trent broke into the first team. So...
Trent's generational.
But Conor Bradley could be old enough to do a job.
But isn't that what Neco Williams was supposed to do? And I'm not knocking Williams, by the way, who didn't, you know, all right, he's a detractor. But it's the same thing as that. It's the same problem you've got with Van Dijk, is that when the level is so high,
the drop-off's going to be massive.
The drop-off is massive.
And with Neco Williams, the first season, he showed us what he could do. He looked a solid right back. Who could get forward and attack in the way old-fashioned attacking right backs used to.
Neco Williams last year, Van Dijk and all, if you've got a relatively stable back four and then you start him against West Brom, he's sound. Yeah. But you're throwing in a Neco Williams when he's playing, and this, again, isn't criticising given circumstances, but when we're playing with the centre-half partnership of Ozan Kabak
and Nat Phillips and Reece Williams.
What do you expect?
On the targets, Mike, and on who we might buy, I mean, business still seems generally slow. It's almost like, you know, the Euros are on, and then the players who aren't in the Euros are perhaps having a break, and people who work for football clubs are probably having a break as well. But do you think also that there's maybe a bit of brinkmanship going on, like a sort of, you know, who blinks first in the transfer market? Because there's a lot of targets rumoured, there's a lot of deals that, you know, people in the know, etc., as is always the case at this time of year, you know, coming out the woodwork, say Liverpool are into X, Y, Z, but none of them are sort of, you know, the only one, you know, Newhouse got sort of confirmed almost that there was Liverpool interest in terms of the journalist that said there was interest, but equally then it was like, but they're just waiting, well, what are you waiting for, do you know what I mean, like this is what I mean about the brinkmanship. There's some. It feels like everyone's sort of looking what everyone else is doing at the moment, and, you know, maybe just biding the time. But like I said, it's only 47 days until the season kicks off.
Yeah, I mean, they probably got like a plan A where everyone sells for what we want and or more, and then we can go and get, like, say, like Andy was saying, maybe two or three really, really good players. But if they don't get what they want in, because there will be a target, like, everyone hates to say about it, like, in terms of it's a business, isn't it? So they're not just going to, you know, lash loads of money down the drain and not think about what's coming the other way. There will be sort of, we need to get, like, what we can do on a minimum of bringing in something, it will be a different sort of summer for us. If you know, if we do go and sell Shaqiri for something like 18 million quid or something mad like that, things like that will change, maybe, or not necessarily change, like, entirely, but, all right, well, we've got 20 million quid that we didn't think we were going to have. Can we do something with it this summer? Or maybe should we look at, you know, picking someone up for in January or the summer after now? And, you know, the brinkmanship thing is probably true, because we've seen lots of midfielders linked, haven't we? The, you know, the lad from Mönchengladbach there, Neuhaus. Bissouma has always been a link. And even though I think James Pearce sort of shoot it down a little bit in the Athletic a couple of weeks ago, you know, we had Thiago last summer, where all like the Liverpool side were basically going, nah, it's just, Thiago's not happening. And like all the German sides and their reporters were going, yeah, Liverpool like Thiago, Liverpool think they can get Thiago, and then it happens, doesn't it, really?
How are we?
And then Jota comes up 2 days later, so...
Jota caught everyone out, didn't he? Yeah. Including us. We were like, oh, hang on, we're going to do a reaction show here.
There's stuff that Liverpool have changed, I think, since Van Dijk's the transfers thing all around that, where we were very clearly after him, and, you know, we ended up going and getting him 6 months later, didn't we, in the January. So obviously we were interested first time round, but publicly having to apologise on the website and stuff like that, and all that is probably where FSG and people around the club have learned from mistakes in the past and now use that to go, well, we're not saying, look
on the bright side because of COVID restrictions. We can't take anyone to Blackpool anymore.
I don't know, man. The Big Dipper might have swung Virgil, mightn't it? So
still open. Still dive on the roller coasters, yeah?
Yeah, as long as you have a seat between you, you're probably okay.
And then you can't say you're with him then, can you? You know what I mean? See Jürgen sitting next to, I don't know, say, Newhouse. But on the Big Dipper, we'd be silent. We will do stuff, won't we? We always do.
Different pronunciations of that fellow's name now.
I'm going to say Newhouse, from you and one from me. Well, yeah. We will do stuff, won't we? Like, I know you can point to the summer where we're going in the league is where we only really do a backup keeper. But, you know, we'll always look to do something where we can improve the squad.
We got Shepin, didn't we, then, that summer as well?
Vandenberg.
Yeah.
Vandenberg. But, you know, of course we'll do something. And we're in a far better position to do nothing like we did the other year if we choose to than what we would have been, say, 10 years ago. So, yeah, I think we'll do something. I think it's obvious. You know, there's Genie replacements that you could be talking about. You know,
There's the space of Genie's wage as well, which doesn't get talked about. But you know what I mean? I know we've talked about many times that he wasn't, you know, one of the very top earners at the club. But
still adds up, doesn't it?
Yeah, and so that's now not there. So there's a space on the wage bill, if you like, for someone maybe. The other thing is looking at what other clubs are doing and sort of imagining how that turns out. I can see some Reds, Ian, getting worried about Manchester City. You know, because, you know, they're linked with Kane, they're linked with Grealish, and people are rightly saying, well, you know, put them two into the squad they already had and shit, and oh my God, and blah, blah, blah. And then you've got Chelsea, who made a load of signings and got rid of a manager who was crap and got one who was fairly decent and have ended up European champions. People are worried about them as well. I mean, even if they do sign those players, though, it's no different to what Liverpool have been facing for a long time now, isn't it, in terms of, we know they've got more money, we know they can go and buy these players. We still won the league, though.
Yeah, well, they had Aguero up front. We won the league. They had genuinely the greatest player that's ever played for their club up front. We won the league. Harry Kane scores goals usually, and obviously he had a good season last season, but Harry Kane's game has changed. He's having to drop deep because the pace isn't there anymore. If you've watched him play in any of the England games, the pace isn't there. He can't run onto the ball. Now, Grealish is an excellent footballer.
Yeah, he's boss.
And he could make a difference. But if they don't buy Grealish, they'll buy somebody else equally impressive and expensive. They'll buy someone from somewhere because it's City, is what they do. And they still want to win the Champions League and they're still not managing it. So they will improve. Fine. Jürgen's always said he doesn't want to be the best manager. He wants to manage the best team, and he wants to beat the teams he's not supposed to.
What did Guardiola say when they won the title a couple of months ago? If people think this is only about money, they made a big, big fucking mistake. Funny that, isn't it?
Yeah, but let's go out and spend. Well, you know, they're talking, and this could be part of the whole thing about why no one's actually leaping on anything yet. Nobody knows how much football will cost at the moment. Post-COVID, we don't know what the market is. But people are talking 150 million for Kane. I know it's only paper talk, but there was talk last week. Kane, it's a price of 100 million plus 150 million guaranteed, and you could have either Sterling or Laporte or somebody else. I was like, take the money and the players, because Spurs are getting a really good deal if they do that, but because he's not the Kane he was three years ago.
I've got to dive in on this. Though, has anyone told Raheem Sterling?
Well, yes, he wasn't happy apparently.
Do you know what I mean? I'll just sign for Spurs. Yeah, nice one. Cheers, yeah. Gaffer.
When he's actually looking for his Madrid move, isn't he?
Well, I mean, sorry, I interrupted you then. Sorry,
no, it's okay.
These mythical swap deals that never ever happened. No. I just find them fascinating.
No one's ever seen it. Well, the closest to it was Hoover. What's his name? Hoover?
The closest one we've done
was last season with Jota.
No, even then it wasn't really, because it wasn't a
partial deal.
If we're talking about similarly valued players, Kev Stewart, Andy Robertson,
yeah,
which is mad. Yeah. When you think about it,
out for 8 million, in for 8 million. Yeah.
But if you're talking about Kane, listen, Harry Kane's an exceptional forward.
His figures last season were pretty good as well.
He's not getting any younger.
I don't think he's anywhere near fit, and he's 27. And I think if City sign him, it's a good sign. If they sign Grealish, it's a fantastic sign. But the problem you've got, and this is a problem Liverpool have, and what people don't understand about Liverpool, when Liverpool are at the best level, the better you get, the margin for improvements gets ever smaller. So whereas Harry Kane, if Harry Kane signed for Everton, they'd probably double their output.
Yeah.
Goals-wise, yeah. If Harry Kane signs for City, they'd like probably 1%. Score about 5-6 more.
Yeah.
Possibly. So where's your par? Do you know what I mean? So you're spending 200 million or put, maybe, well, if they sign them about 200, 220, 250 million, whatever.
To possibly add 5 points and still possibly not get, still possibly but not listen, win the Champions
that's
League.
That's the reality and that's the world that we live in. We've proven we've done it before. We can do yeah. it again. We can do it again. But it does make a mockery of the supposedly, well, both the brand City are trying to build and any remnants of financial fair play.
Yeah, I mean, well, that's completely gone, hasn't it?
With a straight face, with the comments coming from the club about saying, oh, it's not about money this, we can't afford strikers that. If I was in the comms department assisting, Gareth, you've worked in comms, you know more than me, I'd be like, lad, shut the fuck up. Because every time you say something, any time we do anything, like, well, hang on, 3 months ago.
What about that?
Yeah. What about that?
No.
Except what, embrace it. The fact that they're so prickly about it means it's a sore point, I think, especially for Guardiola. The fact that he comments on it so
about.
Much.
Yeah, that's what it's about.
It's the whole thing that he's never been challenged to actually build a team. He's never managed anywhere where he hasn't had access to the best players on earth.
That'll always be pointed at him, though, because Barcelona buy Munich, Man City, and if he does go on from anywhere, it almost feels like he's got to go and do it nationally.
Yeah.
To then go, well, you can't go and buy anyone. You've got to use the Spanish squad that you pick. That will always be pointed at Guardiola, and the fact that he brings it up and says it after he's just won a title shows you how close to the surface that always
listen,
is with him.
Let's not get away from it though. His teams play fantastic.
Yeah, of course.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Brilliant, amazing football.
Consistently.
But you need the tools to be able to do that. And if that means you're spending loads of money, then you're not putting the cart before the horse. I mean, that's like me saying, oh, yeah, I'm the world's fastest driver, but I can only do it in the world's fastest car. Stick me in a Fiesta and see how we'll go.
But if Pep wants a challenge, the England job.
Samir.
Oh,
Samir. It's always Samir, isn't it? Well, listen, whoever we buy and whenever we buy them, it'll be discussed beforehand on the gutter, no doubt. And we'll react to it as we always do on the Anfield Wrap. Our reaction, of course, but also of the people who know the player best. We will be doing specials when and if, or if and when, Liverpool do buy some. So we'll wait and see on all that. But yeah, change the subject now. I want to talk about England v Germany at Wembley tomorrow, 5 o'clock, 45,000 crowd in there. I'm pleased to see a crowd, I've got to say, and that the crowds at Euros, in the Euros generally, has been good to see. Feels like a step in the right direction for what we all want, which is getting back to normal and getting back into the grounds and all the rest of it. But on England, we haven't really got into it, I don't feel, across Anfield Wrap content about how we feel about them, why we feel that way. Some really relatively tame stuff when we've mentioned it in passing seems to have provoked some quite mad comments in some of our comment boxes. So I thought we'd talk about it a little bit more in depth on today's Anfield Wrap. So let's really get into it. First of all, I would say that it is absolutely fine, of course, for anyone to like England, watch England, support England, and plenty do, but plenty don't as well. So what I'm going to do is ask everyone in the room your reasons either way. So Mike, I'll start with you. Your reasons either way on supporting or not supporting or ambivalence or whatever it may be towards England. What's your thoughts, mate?
It's strange because, you know, growing up, you're obsessed about getting footy kits and that. And, you know, I used to get the Liverpool kit all the time, but I did used to buy the England kit or have the England kit bought for me by parents and stuff like that. Nowadays, it's more of an ambivalence. Like as I think you said there before, it's like I like the players. I clearly like, yep, Jordan Henderson. I think he's a sound lad. There's a lot for, you know, a lot of people that he doesn't need to, but does. And you know, you only hear half the story. And it's a lot for it's a lot for a lot of the players in England. I do think they all seem to be genuinely sound lads. You know, they're all always, in my opinion, on the right sides of most things that people like to say are political in football that clearly aren't. So that part of it, I'm all fine with. For me, it was like, I remember watching the World Cups in school and being into footy and, you know, at that age, you just want to watch football, play football, everything was football. So, you know, I remember watching the World Cup in Japan and then maybe 2004 is like the last real time I remember being slightly arsed about England. And for many reasons, really, it's as I've grown older, I've just become more ambivalent about it for once. I don't know why. Maybe I was just growing up and changing and stuff like that. But then, you know, I started going to match every week, you know, and I was more bothered about Liverpool. And then there's all sorts of factors. Look, it's not just that I don't like England, so I don't want England to lose. Like, I've always just seen myself as from Liverpool, first and foremost. So Liverpool will always get everything that I throw into football. And as that got older, and there's just been less and less reasons for me personally to be asked about England and the, you know, a lot of England support maybe is, you know, is fine. You support England, go knock yourselves out. You know, harm anyone, support England, do what you do. But a lot of what we see and the negative stuff is, well, it's never going to pull me back in sort of thing. You know what I mean? I'm sort of gone now that the England ship sailed from me when I was about 10. 12, so it's just a weird sort of thing that I couldn't really explain myself. I know my reasons are not like, not one thing happened that made me go, right, that's it, I'm not buying England, you know, I'm not into them anymore. It was just a slow process over time of being more bothered about Liverpool, being less enamoured at some of the things, you know, some England fans do. It's the country as well, though, isn't it? It's a reflection of the country, and you know, we are.
I just don't feel it. Like, yeah. I mean, you know, that's the thing for me. I don't feel it. I can watch a game, and you know, I'll probably watch the game tomorrow.
Same,
but I just don't feel. I never have felt the way I do about Liverpool. I've never had any desire to go to an international football match because the largely boring games. And like, I just don't feel the affinity that I do when I go and watch Liverpool. It feels special, you know. I feel passionate about it. I feel like I'm at one with the people around me. You know, I feel part of something.
That's the biggest thing for me, to being at one with people around me, and like the fact that there's look. I'm not saying there's no Liverpool fans out there who aren't divvies, because there clearly is.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But for me, anyway, in my personal experience, there's 99% of people who are like me, who think like me, who value the same things as me, and you know, that's what I'm in it for. I'm just in it to have a good time and stuff like that. And okay, you could easily sit there and say the opposite to me, and why if you did get involved in England, there probably is people like you, but I didn't. Like, I've not grown up around them, to be honest, and I just couldn't be bothered going to an England game, and because it just wouldn't feel the same to me. And I've sort of been a bit jealous of the Scottish people who've, you know, got to celebrate there, because the way I see it is they more support it like a club, the Scottish people and the Welsh people, and you know, it feels as if they're supporting the club, not just the country, and you know, aren't we great and this, that and the other. It feels as if from the outside looking in, like that's what I want. It's that sort of feel. I don't want it to feel all, like, you know, nationalistic and whatever. And if that, you know, as I said, that's only my opinion of it, really. And I think you're spot on about it being everything. Your environment around you is what makes you, you know, draw into something. And it's just not there for me anymore with England.
What about you, Ian? How do you feel about it all?
Honest to God, if I'd known this was coming up, I would have notes. Lots of notes. This would be the longest thing I've ever done.
Even longer than your season?
Oh, God, yeah. Somebody the other day said they wanted to earn my 25 minutes on the government and nationalism. And the thing is, with England, there are two sides to it. There's the football side and there's the national side. And I don't mean national side in the team. I mean nationalism and patriotism and all the jingoistic nonsense that we've got going on at the moment. As a football team, there have been a couple of occasions where I've been an England fan, where I've supported the team. I think they were 96 and 2000. There was one competition where I actually had the red away England kit. Not the kit, not the whole kit. I wouldn't go full kit. That'd be ridiculous.
Shinies and that.
Yeah, the whole shinies. No. So I got the top. But there was one season where we had the flags on the car, but it was for the kids, because I think our Tom was about 4 at the time, so it must be about 2000. It was kind of like that national identity that we had, and this is where it could get convoluted. You get the national identity of England from the Britpop era going forward until about 2000. So you basically get the national identity that we had from Britpop through the Blair's Cool Britannia thing where being English was actually something that was quite cool for a time. And then you get the Tories elected. And at that point, the national identity becomes nationalism again and brings us to where we are now with Brexit and all that nonsense. So there was a period where I embraced the idea of, well, it'd be nice to see England win things. And it's good for the kids. So, you know, our Tom's in the car seat in the back. We'll put the flags up. It'll be great. And the reality of England as a football team is they're generally not very good. And they don't play good football and basically never have. I will be 60 in a couple of years. There are probably about five decent England performances in my entire lifetime. The Italian 90, we were terrible. It was absolutely, they played bad football. It wasn't, Italian 90 is set, held up as this beacon because of what it was. And it gentrified the game to a massive extent and brought it to a mass new market, consumerism. But England were bad in it. The 96 Euros, England were bad. There was one good game, the Holland game, where Venables got the Christmas tree formation and actually had England play good football for one of the rare occasions ever. My biggest experience of England as a team is that they break our footballers. They broke Jamie Redknapp. They broke Daniel Sturridge. Broke him massively. We send Daniel Sturridge away with England and we say, well, this lad here, he's had a couple of injuries and he's got his own specific training routine that we need him to follow. And they go, yeah, sound, whatever. And they make him do what they want to do, and we lose Sturridge. Basically, end Sturridge's career for Liverpool. And that is my experience of England all over. Plus, England's fans have been, throughout the decades, shameful to their own players. Their treatment of John Barnes as a fan base was disgusting. And the racism that Barnes suffered from the people he was playing for was absolutely disgusting. The way England as a team treated our gifted players, he didn't know how to use Barnes, he didn't know how to use McManaman. One of the best England performances was the 5-1 against Germany. What's that? That's Liverpool beating Germany 5-1 for you. Now get a grip and treat us with some respect.
Well, Gerrard got pelters off a significant number as well.
And one of the worst things, you know, it's Beckham. I have no problem with David Beckham. I'm sure he's probably a fairly decent bloke. And if you went out for a pint with him, he'd be a decent lad. And the way England treated him after his sending off, the way those fans, the stuff they said about his wife and his kids.
It's tabloid-esque, isn't it?
It's absolute tabloid-esque. And it's generated by the tabloids. And it's what we were talking about on the show last week about the whole turnip thing. Right. It's that attitude from the tabloids. And we know which tabloids lead this. And the fans embracing, the fans were hideous towards Beckham, who'd done nothing other than, you know, he's a petulant sending off. Sound as millions of petulant sending off. But my bigger deal with England now is their fan base, because it is nationalistic, it is jingoistic, it is, as predicted, embracing the idea of 10 German bombers and the RAF from England shot them down. It's kind of like, you're talking about a war 60 years ago, 70 years, 75 years ago, you're talking about something your parents didn't encounter. Get a grip. This is not what it's about, but this is what our country has become. Our country has become this national identity that's so insular and hates everybody else that we've become a hateful little country. It's a horrible place to be, and that's very much reflected in a section. And I will say it's only a section. It's a section of the England fans, but it's a vocal section.
It's
a vocal section
though,
boo the knee.
No, genuinely though, like it's a reflection of society in this country, though, and like it is loud, but it's not shrinking, it's growing, sort of thing. That's probably where I am on that side of I just don't want to be involved in any of that, and like not that it's the main reason to be involved and be an England fan and support the England footballers, but it's just one big thing that's starting to grow. That's
not
like,
off-putting, isn't it? It makes it hard to support them as an identity, but also as a team. If they win against Germany, I'll be like, yeah, sound you. You've got a chance of getting the final. If they lose, I'll turn over and see what else is on telly. It won't affect my life one iota. I won't think about it 5 minutes afterwards. Last time they got knocked out of him, no, the time before they got knocked out of a major championship. Obviously, Hodgson was in charge and I thought it was the funniest thing I'd ever seen.
Yeah, that was hilarious, to be fair. Andy, what's your England sentiment one way or another?
You know what? I'd just be repeating basically what Ian's articulated, the Mike articulated very well. So I'll try and be as succinct as I can. And maybe just simple reasons. People know where I stand politically and what my thoughts are around, you know, booing the knee and one thing and the other. But more than anything, in fact, I will say something. it's a weird one for me because my daughter loves football and she's really interested in the game tomorrow. So I will watch it and I will watch it with her. And maybe vicariously through her, I might enjoy it. And also, we'll say the actual players who represent England are probably the best set of lads.
Yeah, they're likeable. Yeah.
For a long
even
time.
The manager,
and
I was think's all right.
Very proud of Jordan Henderson being on the LGBT power list that was published yesterday.
Yeah. The only footballer who's on there, isn't he?
Yeah. So made up for him. Marcus Rashford, what more can you say? You know, they seem eminently likeable, lad. Raheem Sterling.
Yeah.
It's ironic, isn't it? Because it's everything we are that they are, but it's everything that their supporters aren't.
That's what I'm saying. They are the lads on the pitch. The actual England team are not representative of Team England, if that makes sense.
No, and you've got the position.
Southgate gets pelters. And all right, he's not a great manager, but he's inoffensive.
He's a decent fella, like
and he's articulate.
Yeah. And his article in the Football Tribune, was it? Before the competition started. He wrote a really good article about what it meant to him.
But on the other hand, they don't get me blood going. That's what you're saying.
Yeah, that's
the thing. They don't get me blood going as a team. They said, you're a 96. I think everyone had a great time and fair play.
That 96 was like a little roller coaster thing, wasn't it? Like, we all got on board with it. You know, you go in the pub, you're at an age, you know, you're getting barbecued, you know, whatever.
But this is what I'm saying. It was a great laugh.
Yeah.
No one looks like they're having a laugh. No one.
No.
Even like the Team England brigade, rah, rah, rah. They don't look like they're having a laugh. You mentioned the Scottish before. I was up in Edinburgh last weekend and everyone was just having it was great. It was just an atmosphere. Mm. They knew they weren't going to win it. They knew they were up against it. But you know what? They just enjoy it.
Yeah.
No one looks like they're enjoying themselves. And I can't identify with any of that. With any of that. And it goes far deeper and far more political. But isn't footy supposed to be about having a good time? I don't understand.
There is deeper stuff as well. I mean, you know, we've only got so much time to talk about it on here, but, you know, there is the deeper stuff about, you know, how a lot of people feel about the Football Association. There is the stuff around, you know, the Football Association and Hillsborough. There is the stuff, of course, about how Liverpool as a city and a group of people have been treated politically by the elite. All that is extremely heavy stuff, but it does.
And how, as a group of fans, we're treated by other fans.
Yeah, well that or how we as Scousers are treated when we go elsewhere in the country by other people that were then meant to all join together under a flag and support the football team.
Of course, there's loads of that. And you'd need hours, days even, but you don't even have to dig that deep. And I think the reasons you're saying, you're spot on. But I'd like to think people who are listening to this will already identify, because we talk about it a lot, let's be fair. You know, they already know all this stuff. So that's when it does get me back up a little bit, when you get the chippy, oh, well, you know, why don't you just separate off Liverpool? Sal, mate, you know what, if I could, I would, mate. I really, really would. But unfortunately, I can't. So on this particular tournament, I'm the same as Ian. If England go out, then great, because we get Henderson back earlier.
Yeah.
Which is, so my primary concern with England is always, shit, I hope none of our players get injured. That's it. And if they go through, for the lads themselves, great, happy days. But I just want to see good football.
I've got a big question around this, which is...
Sorry, Gareth.
It's all right. A big question around it for you, Mike, is the idea that... by doing what we do, or a lot of us, by doing what we do and speaking how we speak about the England football team and, you know, the Scouts Not English flags and things like that, there's an argument that you're almost othering yourself, you know what I mean? So you're saying like what Andy's saying, you know, like we're separate, we're not a part of you, we don't want to be a part of you. Obviously, that does not reflect the view of every single person in this city or even every single person who supports Liverpool, not claiming that to be the case. But I do see a counter argument out there where people say, you know, is that almost like, is that a bad thing almost? Do you know what I mean? Like, are you doing Liverpool down by having that attitude, like othering yourself, basically?
I personally wouldn't say so, no, because, like, if we're, so there's a lot of people in the city are telling people who ask the question why we feel this way. So then for someone to turn around and go, well, why don't you just ignore it? Or don't you think that's bad? Like, no, we're literally telling you why some of us don't, some of us do, whatever. You know, like, if I had a friend who genuinely was banging to England or like wanted to support England, I wouldn't be like, oh, you're a wrong one, you lad. Do you know what I mean? I'd just be like, well, go on then, have a nice time. Go to the match if you want, or do this and that. But for me, I don't think it's... You can make arguments, can't you, on the opposite side of every argument, really.
Yeah.
But for me, for personally, no, I don't think it's ordering ourselves. And it's not like they haven't... It's like I said before, we've said the reasons why we feel... We might feel othered... But from like someone's point of view, but you know, I've been going to Liverpool for ages now, and I come away from grounds going, them Palace fans are all right, you know, they never sang one song about, you know, Feed the Scousers, or they just went and supported their own club, well in. And like, how mad's that, that you're coming away from a ground thinking about that, of a group of people in the same country that, you know, as you said before, you're meant to all get under the flag and support, and you know, everyone's... I do get the fact that everyone's different and you're not going to get along with every single person in the world or the country or even your own city. So, you know, there may be a slight argument of it in some people's points of view that it might be a bit other than that we want to be separate. But in my experience anyway, I want to be with, like I said before, I want to be with the people who think like me, who act like me, you know, who are just decent. And I know there's England fans out there who are decent and sound and lovely people, but... I'm pretty much having a decent life, and I'm quite happy with everyone I've surrounded myself with. So, like, I just don't see why I'd want to dive headfirst into the divvies that do associate with England.
I always find it interesting when you go abroad on holiday, and I think Mike's exactly right. And I think, you know, probably the vast majority of people go and watch England the sound, but I always find it interesting when you go abroad and on holiday and who you gravitate towards. Round the pool and say hello. I mean, I'm antisocial at the best of times, but
Geordies, nah. Scots,
exactly, yeah, exactly, yeah, no, yeah, like the ones who don't take throwing patio furniture as a national sport, shall we say? And I've actually been in there, but when the last Euros, I was away on holiday with my family, and the England game was on, and it was the game when England got beat by Iceland. I think it was Iceland. Yeah,
under Hodgson.
And it wasn't like a deliberate thing, but they had it on a big screen, and like, I'm trying really hard not to tar all over the people, but like, and I don't want to stereotype, but there was a couple of tables where you could tell, even before you see them, you'd heard them, like, you could basically paint a picture of who they were, what they looked like, what they were wearing, shall we say. And then the other end of it, there was basically, I think there was us, another family from Liverpool, the kids milling around, Joe... Family from Manchester, family from Newcastle, funny enough, and a couple of Scottish families just like going, and I'm not saying in any way superior, but it's just the difference. It's funny how we didn't identify with that. Mm. But
working class cities,
the Manc lad was actually an England supporter actively, but he just couldn't be asked. Sitting the other end, do you know what I mean? He was watching proactively watching the game, and he was disappointed. I took the piss off because he's a man can let England got beat. But he had an interest in the game. But because he didn't make a big hoorah about it, and I think they're the silent majority.
Yeah.
But that's not what people... So the reason why I said we're abroad, we're in a Turkish resort. What other the people who were there, both the staff and the other nationalities on holiday, what are they going to say? Oh yeah, we saw the lads, he was supporting England, he was sound, he was with his family. Or are they going to talk about or get the impression from the dickheads at the front?
The extreme behaviour, yeah.
Yeah, and that's it.
What do you think, Keith? Do you think any of this ever changes? Because, you know, it's been a conversation for a long time now, and I think we've all sort of admitted around the table there that once upon a time there was different times, you know, that we bought a pair of shorts or whatever and got a little bit excited when Michael Owen scored a goal or whatever it might be.
You're saying you don't get a switch on for England anymore?
But, you know, do you think it ever changes? Like, you know, England have played at Anfield, not for a long time, but they have. Is that the answer? You know, them going around the country a bit more and gravitating away from Wembley and, you know what I mean? What do you have any answers to how this sort of changes in the future?
Yeah, vote Labour. Dead simple, that one.
Which Labour?
That's everyone. Well,
I mean, that's completely different.
The left-wing version of Labour, the Labour, I'm trying to rediscover somewhere. Yeah, I could do a half an hour on that one as well. It changes. It does change because it's changed in the past. And I think the moment we're in at the moment is the worst reflection, because it's reflecting this country, and this country's identity is being dictated by people who shouldn't be in charge, but are, and have a very large working majority. So we've got 5 years of them. So I think if the country, there's a bit of hope last night from France. France has basically rejected nationalist parties overnight, very low voting turnout, and they still got 43% of that turnout. But France has basically rejected nationalist parties in their election system because they don't control any regions at all now. And you're seeing this come through in a couple of places. The by-election the other week where the Lib Dems won because it was tactical voting by Labour voters. Labour completely plummeted, but took a safe Tory seat. So possibly, as the rest of the world is beginning to reject nationalism, maybe we're in a phase where we will start to reject nationalism. At the point we start to reject nationalism, maybe the cultural identity of the country becomes more all-encompassing.
Inclusive.
More inclusive. I hate to use the word tolerance, because it's not about tolerating people. It's about embracing people. It's kind of like, I'm European, I'm not English, I just happen to be born in England. I've got more in common with a working lad from Paris or Milan or Rome or New York or Brooklyn than I will ever have
absolute
with
hipster,
somebody who agrees. Sorry.
Absolute hipster.
Yeah, I always am. With somebody who agrees with the Tory government. That's me. My stance is based on the politics, and the politics of Liverpool are left-wing and have been for a very long time. Now, if the rest of the country begins to move back towards the centre in some way, then we might see a point where the English national identity becomes something I feel more sympathetic to. And at that point, the national team would be something that might be more interesting to me.
Can you not just simplify it down to, like, the national anthem while we're at it?
Yeah, it should be Jerusalem.
Like,
again, no, look like it.
But it's just a day. But it's just a dirge. And I'm saying that, glibly, but it's just a dirge. You listen to, like, the Italian national anthem,
yeah,
for instance.
Ole Marseillaise.
They get bang into it. France,
yeah,
there you go. The
French
one.
Yeah.
Absolute rammers, so to speak. Yeah. And we've got that. I mean, there was a comment, on... leading into the Euros about when Italy got introduced to the tournament and Andrea Bocelli sang Nessun Dorma. Yes. And like, just even like the thought of that name of that song gets your bloods up.
Bocelli doing Nessun Dorma on the pitch for Leicester after they won the title. Absolutely incredible.
And they've got that stage, and I just think, and I know it's a really lazy comparison, but it's just crap. And anyway.
There you go. That has been the Anfield Wrap. A little bit different today.
No, the Anfield Wrap is not crabbing there, by the way.
We went there. We talked about it. We did something a little bit different. Hope you like it. There will be much more football chat across the Anfield Wrap video, audio, and on the website, theanfieldwrap.com. If you don't subscribe to the Anfield Wrap as well, do remember that you can download the app, you can get some free tokens, and you can have a go of premium content, see if you like it, try before you buy and all that kind of stuff, and then you can get involved and subscribe. Hope you enjoyed that one. Up the Reds. Sports Social Podcast Network.